This episode of Yes But Why podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
One of the big things that I'm like trying to get into is like empowering women, because I didn't realize the level of lack of empowerment.
Yeah.
Throughout my life, because my mom is super intense, right? Like, she's very, very strong, and she's very, like, she's got a lot of opinions, and she's important, and when she talks, people listen.
Wow.
And so I was just like, well, that's what a woman is, and that's what we are. And
that's so cool.
And she brought me to events. She worked in politics for Boston Teachers.
Cool.
And so, like, I'd go to events, and, like, my first performance, we're, like, in line at picket lines or whatever, entertaining the people, holding signs, you know, just a little kid doing song and dance numbers. That's what I thought life was, you know? And she's a strong woman who people believe in, care about. I just thought that's the way people were.
Love that.
Yeah. So lately, when I've been on some of the women's groups, like on Facebook and stuff, I'm like, wait, what do you mean you're not standing up for yourself? Well, you tell him to fuck off when he says that. That's what you say. Or like, they're like, this person said something super rude to me. And I was like, did you bark at them?
Yeah.
And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm sorry. I not only have a strong mother, but I'm from Boston.
Right.
Like, I'm angry all the time. Right? So, if you try to mess with me, like, I'm like, go ahead. I'm bigger and crazier than anything you could imagine. That's what I always think about.
Yeah, I'm from the Northwest, so that's just not a thing. And also being raised kind of, like, in the country, redneck, whatever, was just like, oh, I don't know, I've never felt like I could really talk back to people for, like, safety reasons, you know, as you just kind of, like, laugh and pretend like it didn't happen and, like, get the fuck out, you know?
Safety reasons meaning there was, like, militia crowd or that type of people in your vicinity?
No, I think a lot of women do not respond or laugh it off when those things happen, like sexual harassment, for example, because maybe they're young, there's an age dynamic, they're just afraid someone's going to hurt them. Like, people will fuck you up.
Yeah, it's true.
You know? And maybe you are a woman, and maybe you are a little bit less strong, or a little bit smaller, or a little bit more alone in the world, you know?
Yeah.
All kinds of factors. So I love that you had that experience, and that you have always felt strong. And I know that that is not a normal way for women to feel
realize. Yeah, I didn't
We're still
know.
A developing nation in many ways.
Yeah. It's like, it's funny how we are just who we are. Like, I didn't know until somebody was like, hey, everyone feels really like they can't do stuff. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Right.
Come on.
Let's get out there.
And he's like, stand behind me. I'll tell them.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to mess with us.
Love
be
that.
Like, what, you got a problem?
Yeah.
What? Like, just even the sheer idea of people feeling like they don't have rights is, I'm like, we'll just take them. And they're like, well, they're laws. And I go, laws.
Yeah.
Good guys, laws. Laws are silly. Laws don't mean you have to be a certain way.
Right.
Like, laws were made by someone who had a reason, for whatever reason. You live your life the way you have to. And if you have to fight, you gotta fight.
Right.
Right.
And that's how laws got made and changed, and amendments and all kinds of things, as people fought for it.
Oh, well, I'm way more cynical in that I think that most people who are at the level of government where they make laws are just working for themselves, and they're not actually representatives of anyone.
There's so much of that.
And so when they create a law is like 47 rules with like one title, and like one rule means something to the people, and then like the rest of them make money for them.
Ugh.
And so realistically, whenever, like, like, for instance, when the, like, bathroom laws, when people are talking about, like, oh, you can't go, and I go where you want.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And they're like, but there's a law. And I go where you want.
Yeah, go where you'll be safest.
I don't care what the law is.
Yeah, if you look like a woman, go in the woman's room,
like,
for
sure. Do whatever
sure.
you like, want.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I've ever, and I, again, I, my mom also was like, everybody's the same. Doesn't matter what they look
love
like.
That.
Doesn't matter what. Who they love, doesn't matter how much money they have, they are the same as us, so
yeah.
you treat them nice. And
love
it's like,
that.
Well, nice, but also like, you got a problem? I'm holding my dukes up.
Right.
You know, that kind
no
of
one's
stuff.
Immune.
Yeah,
yeah.
Trouble.
Everyone's
but
the same standard.
You're my pal, unless I have to punch you. You know, that
right.
kind of stuff.
Boston.
But tell me, yeah, totally. So I don't know anything about the Northwest. Where
oh
in the Northwest are you from? And then, like, you say redneck. I don't know what that means.
Exactly.
Because, like, you know, I'm from Boston. They told me what Texas was like when I was growing up. Turns out that's not actually what Texas is like.
Right.
So what is what where you're from like?
Well, I'd say American country is American country, but regionally it has its own little different flavors, if you will. So, like, it's not that different where I'm from than Texas. It's just not Texas. But, like, country is country. Like, the people I grew up next door to had thick southern drawls, even though they'd been in that community for generations, you know?
Yeah.
Grew up just south of the Canadian border in Washington State.
In Washington.
So, like, I could see the Canadian mountains and also mountains in Washington surrounding. So, really beautiful kind of farmland and a lot of people living around in, like, old farmhouses that weren't really being used for farming anymore because, you know, with the industrial farming, you know, big farm, big ag kind of stuff that happened in the 80s
and 90s. Oh, it took over a bunch
yeah,
of the land?
All the little farms just kind of were evaporating throughout my childhood and on. So a few friends were still on working dairy farms, but we were on a retired dairy farm and we just had like sheep and goats and a few cows and such, and chickens and all that. But like the neighbors, it was a lot of like little trailers or little like mobile home kind of things, but like then surrounded by like a boneyard, just like old cars broke down, like old whatever they could salvage because they like to fix cars or they're a mechanic or whatever. It was like a lot of that kind of shit going on. So
yeah.
When I say redneck, that's what I mean. Like just a lot of like kind of semi-clothed children running around screaming and chaos. And like we had our little like kind of white picket fence, very religious little house that we were in our little, you know, 5 acres, but it was kind of, you know, surrounded by like some very Christian families that were also homeschooling, who was like kind of a very conservative area, and then some that were just kind of a little bit more wild and not religious and not really supervised. And I'm still not clear if there was drug addiction going on with the parents or like exactly what was going on, but just, you know, kind of a little bit of chaos ensuing around.
I feel like there's a lot more chaos with parenting when, you know, like in the 80s and stuff, you know. Now I feel like there's a lot more, like, people are watching you and making sure you're doing the right thing. But there's a lot of not watching.
There was not watching happening.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents tried, and that was why they homeschooled us, in part, was because they'd had horrible experiences in the public school system as kids, and they didn't want us to get bullied like they'd been and to deal with that. So
that's hard.
Yeah, and plus
from
the
like their point of view
stuff too. I think they were like, we want to protect you from the world, and you
sure.
know, they wouldn't say indoctrinate you, but like indoctrinate you with
sure.
very specific programming.
Mm.
So that was going on for me and for some of the neighbors who were also homeschooled.
Were your parents like meek in the way, like you said, they were being bullied? Like, were they, you know, like sort of quiet and shy in that way, or was it like, do you think they were being bullied because of the Christianity? And
my mom was raised Catholic, but not like crazy Catholic like I was, and my dad was not raised religious, but they both, I think, had certain levels of developmental stuff going on. So like my dad was put in a class with the retarded kids, as they said back then.
Oh yeah.
Even though it was just like he probably was like a little bit autistic or just like just had dyslexia or something.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, we'll never be diagnosed because that just wasn't something that happened.
Yeah.
And try admitting to that when you're a tough Republican man, you know, like you're not gonna admit that you can't really read, you're just gonna like keep fixing cars. And
I feel like the older and older you get, yeah, you just keep denying it because it just like feels like, you know, I should have done this by now, so.
Yeah, and you just feel stupid because people have been telling you to be stupid his whole life, so.
Yeah, that's never great.
Yeah, it's not great.
It never leads to you being nice to the people around you either.
No, it does not help anything at all. So that was happening, and my mom had her own stuff. I think she's probably a little on the spectrum, mental health, like, you know, her own little rainbow of undiagnosed things, so.
Yeah, and nobody was very sensitive to that back then.
No. Yeah, and, like, I think she tried to tell her parents that she was struggling with depression as a kid, but it wasn't a thing that, like, anyone had words for or understood in the 50s and 60s.
No.
So it's just like, I'm going to kill myself all the time. It's just like,
join the club.
Yeah, exactly. Here's your pills. Like, do it.
Well, I mean, no, I think about things like, you know, there's that Rolling Stones song, Mother's Little Helper.
Yeah.
And, like, I used to sing that when I was a kid, just Rolling Stones. And then as I got older and now I'm a mother, I'm like, oh, God, my mother's actually taking a pill? And then I was like, oh, I, like, Googled, like, what pill were mothers taking?
It's like benzo or some shit.
Yeah, it was like that or, like, Quaaludes.
Yes.
Like, Quaaludes. It's like, are you kidding me with the Quaaludes?
And they were all drinking and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, and just, like, the kids were just, like, wherever. Like, I was like, what happened?
It's bad.
That's why I'm like, guys, when the other mothers get really, like, you got to watch them. I was like, our parents didn't even know where we were in the house.
Mm-mm.
We were fine.
No.
Like, your kids are going to be all right. Like, the safety measures in your house alone to protect them.
Yeah, it's crazy,
like,
right?
There's so much more just in your house that is protecting you than when we were kids. And it was like, oh, what is this open wall with some wires? Hey, kids, don't touch this.
Oh, that was basically 100%. Where I grew up. Yeah.
That's what I touched.
Yeah, like, we hung out in the basement.
Like, my sister and I hung out in the basement. It was the least finished part of the whole house. It was like open.
Mold everywhere. Yeah, floods.
It was like a big section where the, like, gas heater is, and it's like there's flame. And I remember looking at that flame all the time and being like, I wonder what that is. Exactly. Oh, man. So you mentioned that you're living with your family for a while, and this small thing, you got homeschooled. Mm-hmm. Did you go to college from homeschool, or did you not go to college?
Oh, I did. And
went to college.
I have my mom to thank for that, because she pushed me to do it. Because I didn't have any proof that I was an intelligent person. I was just like, I've been here on this farm all my life. Like,
yeah, I've been homeschooled, and they don't have, like, records.
Know. Yeah, I was like,
no,
but
they
my
do,
mom
but...
was like, all right, you're going to go to college. So there was a program, I think there still is, in Washington State, where high school juniors and seniors, if you qualify, you pass the college exam, you can go to college for free at the community college.
Oh, so that's awesome.
I went when I was 15, like the summer right before I turned 16. I passed the test. I placed into English 101. And then the month that I turned 16, I started going.
Great.
So I got to, like, get an associate's degree right before I turned 18, and then go to a 4-year college after that.
Oh, and you went there.
Finished up and
which
had
is a
career. I went to a few colleges, but I ended up, I briefly went to Texas because I had a full ride to go to this really conservative Catholic school, and I was like, I went to this liberal arts.
Did you go to UD?
I did go to UD.
I went to UD. That's so crazy. See, I'm from Boston Catholic. It's less crazy, but I have friends who were part of, like, Opus Dei. Were you part of Opus Dei?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
We were more like Benedictine and shit.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got the whole Catholicism thing.
Oh, my God, you know.
It's turns out after I left for college, my parents stopped going, and they later told me, like, oh, well, we were just going because we thought we should.
Love
like, they
that.
Literally don't go anymore.
That's
they
great.
Don't, it doesn't occur to them. They're like, well, be nice to people. It's still, you should be nice. And hey, Jesus was nice. You should be nice. Like, it's stuff
love
like that. But it's not like.
It's the harmless side of it. It's
great. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go and sing a little bit, and then let's not go for 6 months. Like, okay, that seems fine.
That's fine.
Right.
My family was, like, very right-wing, fundamentalist Catholic. There was one other family in our community that was the same kind of Catholic as we were, like, in our whole county. There's a bunch of churches in the county, but, like, one other family. And it was like, I was supposed to marry their son. It was like that kind of shit.
Whoa.
Like, we couldn't even, like, look at each other at church. We were both, like, so awkward about it. So I was just like, I gotta go out.
How'd you get out of that?
It wasn't like it was gonna happen. We couldn't even, like, talk to each other. We were both just too shy. But
whoa.
I just got out of town, you know?
Yeah.
So I went to University of Dallas.
That's
for
so crazy.
One semester.
For 10 minutes, right?
Yeah. And I was like, whoa. It was was when Bush was getting reelected, I guess. It was 2004. It was my first time voting. I was the only person who voted for Kerry on the whole campus. Everyone gave me
bless
shit.
Bless your heart for thinking we're the same age.
Yeah.
I graduated from UD in 2000.
Oh, my God.
I did all 4 years there.
Oh, bless your heart.
Again, another example of me clearly being oblivious to any problems.
Wow.
Because I went there, went all 4 years, got a theater degree, had no problems, had a nice time.
That's great.
My friends, when we graduated, were like, how'd you feel about that oppressive religion? And I was like, what?
So rough.
And I was like, I didn't even notice.
I love that you pollyannaed your way through.
I feel like I had no idea how much I'm clearly pollyannaing with whole life. Like, I don't know. I didn't know that there were, I was like, oh, well, I mean, they said to pray, but I was just like, well, I'll just sit here quietly. That's all I, what?
Yeah.
What was wrong?
I think it was just,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, UD is not for everyone. Believe me.
I think if you're the right person, though, it could be pretty cool.
I'm a super theater gal, so I never really did anything else.
Great.
It was like, who knew there was religion?
I really went for their English Lit program. I'm an English Lit mythology nerd, and you know,
she got a little bit in.
I aced Lit Trad. The professor was like, no one gets an A in this class, or maybe one person. I was like, I'm going to get that A, and I got that A.
Do you remember the teacher?
Nope, he was like tall, kind of blondish, German looking.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know. I honestly don't remember half the people's names. People always do. I just figured my audience might be a little UD-ish. They'd be like, oh, interesting. You never know.
UD. Okay.
Because my college friends, you know.
Of course.
Support me.
Blows
but,
my mind.
But so after UD, UD's not for you. Where'd you go after that?
I went back to my, not my hometown, but like the city nearest, like a 60,000 people city. Mm. And Bellingham, Washington. I went to Western Washington University there. So it was like 20 minutes from the farm. You know, I really had gotten out of the small town.
But Bellingham sort of city.
It's
yeah,
a little blueberry. It's Washington's very red. Oregon, California, very red outside of, you know, Bellingham, Olympia, Seattle, Portland, Eugene, San Francisco, LA. Outside of those cities, you are in red land. And that's where I grew up. So going to Bellingham was like, woohoo, you know?
Yeah.
I get to be me a little more. And I moved in with my gay friends. We had this little gay household for a couple of years. And it was a nice little era, you know?
Yeah.
It was tough because it was like I was no longer, my family had been my support, you know, my whole life emotionally and my primary friends, you know, all that stuff that happens when you're in a dysfunctional, surviving household. So that was a thing. And then it was kind of like I had to leave all that behind to become myself. So it was like, oh, I'm, you know, a kid and I make no money and I'm in full-time school and I'm like living off of nothing and trying not to like take too many loans out so I don't have debt. So just like scraping by and like slowly got some jobs and like eventually was working full-time and like built myself up. I got an internship at the state senate working for a senator, and that was like my first time ever of having like a stipend. It was just 2 months and it was $1,200 a month, but it was like the most I'd ever made in my whole life. And so like since that point I've never been like impoverished. Like that job just helped me like get on my feet in a way. And
I saved it and like
I just
lived on it for a while. That's solid.
You know, I just had cheap rent and stuff, so I was able to like, okay, I have this money, I'm like caught up, and now like, okay, I have a little bit of loans coming in, I have these jobs, and like from that point on it was like I've never been like ground zero before.
That's nice.
But I've also
you figured
had,
out
like,
the juggle.
I did, and like I've had a lot of support. And I mean, I did social work for a long time. So I went to college. I designed my own degree because they have like this kind of hippie program at the school called Fairhaven College.
Nice.
And you design your own degree. So I did like activism and advocacy for LGBT people and women. And I ended up doing an internship at the domestic violence shelter that turned into a career in domestic violence and sexual assault survivor advocacy.
How did you even know these things existed? Like, how did you even know to go and help? Like, did you meet people when you got to college and then you were like, wait a minute, these are my best friends, I need to make their lives better? Or because it wouldn't seem like there'd be a lot of, hey sweetheart, you should go be an activist, or like you should represent the queer crowd because they need you. Like that's not something that your Catholic parents are likely to say.
So where
did it come from?
Well, I went to this liberal arts school, right? So Western Washington University and the very liberal Fairhaven College on campus designed design your own degree, et cetera. And all my friends were gay, and I was, like, slowly realizing who I was at all, oh. you know. And when I was going to Fairhaven College, I met a friend. I think we had a class together, and she was working at the domestic violence shelter. And I was like, oh, that's fascinating, you know, and had an interest in it and ended up doing the volunteer training and doing a little bit of volunteering, not a ton, but, like, I did my internship there. I did legal advocacy internship, so I'd go to court with people trying to get restraining orders and, like, help them fill out the paperwork. And, I mean, I wasn't, like, doing it alone. Like, I was, like, being taught how to do it by the legal advocate.
But you, like, found the people who could get you into that position. Well, that's good.
Yeah, and then when they're hiring, it was like, okay, she already knows the drill. So I started doing the overnights at the shelter. And then that eventually ended up being better positions. And then I got hired at an even better organization. I had my own office and, like, office hours, plus, like, carrying the hotline and doing prevention work and, like, after hours crisis intervention and, like, just like they had a shelter, but they also had, like, an office, like, counseling center, advocacy center. So I kind of just, like, worked my way up in the ranks of that field for about 5-6 years. Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and then it's like you kind of, I didn't realize this until after I got out of it, but it was like a total shoo-in for me, because I think I had to, like, leave my actual home state and, like, get far enough away to actually, like, see my family clearly. But, like, my family has all kinds of bad stuff going on, and, you know, domestic violence looks like a lot of different things, and my family has a lot of that going on, and, you know, not just in my nuclear family, but, like, throughout my family. So, like, my uncle was horribly abusive to his family. I didn't know till I was 19 he committed suicide. And I mean, he would have, like, taken them all out if he could find them. You know, it was, like, that bad. So, yeah. And we didn't have any idea. I mean, my mom had seen, like, one red flag and called him out and been, like, banished from the family for doing that.
Yeah.
So she was trying to stand up for her nieces and, like,
I have friends like that who have, like, a thing where, like, as soon as they stand up, they get, like, kicked out of the whole family.
Yeah.
And it's like, what side are you standing on?
The side of abuse. Yeah,
ignorance and blind ignorance is bliss. It's easier to pretend it's not happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to acknowledge that it is, and then what do we even do about it? That's pretty overwhelming.
So I bet you learned a lot about this kind of stuff when you were working in the shelter in crisis prevention. You're helping all these other people, and then, like, you know, lightning bulb, you know, hey, maybe I should talk about myself. Is that what made you move out? Were you like, I gotta get out of this world, it's too heavy? Or
I was just really sick a lot by the end, you know. I think I'd always been kind of a sickly kid, and then had, like, a really stressful, you know, coming of age experience with, like, finding out I was queer and, like, leaving, you know, my family, feeling rejected by them, and then, like, trying to figure out how to survive. So I had kind of just been, like, trying to survive for so long, and I was finally like, well, I'm, like, 25. I'm not ugly or stupid or not talented. I was, like, starting to experiment with music a little bit and getting some nice support in my hometown for that. And I was just like, man, I need to get out of here. I was just feeling so much physical pain and sickness all the time. And I just, that's a really common thing for people that do high stress careers like social work. The burnout rate's 1 year for new social workers.
I know.
I've been doing it for 5 going on 6. So I was kind of like, I feel like I've really done it, and I just need to go and do anything else. So I had a friend in Austin, which is somewhere people had always told me, like, you should go to Austin, you should check it out, and it didn't seem like a real place. But my friend it's not real. My friend from Bellingham had moved here, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go make sure her boyfriend's a good person, you know, like, I'm gonna see what her life's like. She's living with this guy, I don't know, love my friend, and he's great, turns out. And
that's good.
The next thing you know, I'm like, oh, I'm in love with this town. I mean, 10 minutes here, I was like, oh, everyone's nice. It's sunny. I'm not cold. You're always cold in Washington. I'm like, not cold here. Ever cold. Which is a miracle. And now I'm a little over the heat, but at that point it was a miracle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my friends helped me move down here, you know. They let me crash with them for a couple months while I got a job and got a place to live and all that. And
yeah, nice people are here, you know. Yeah. I feel like my nicest college friends came here too.
Yeah.
I was, when I moved here, it was right after a particularly tumultuous relationship, and I had to get out fast. And they were, I was in Dallas, and they were like, get here, get in your car and drive to my house. You can stay here as long as you need to. And that's how I got here, because I was like, I had no intentions of living in Austin. Austin was not even like on a list. And they were like, get here now, we'll deal with it, you can figure it out.
We'll
help. As soon as I got here, I was like, oh wow, this place has all the things I want.
I know.
Like,
so sweet.
And I love Austin, and don't get me wrong, like, I understand from the point of view of the unicorns. Unicorns are people who've lived here their whole lives. I understand that there's a lot of trouble. There are definitely from some like city infrastructure troubles, and then there's, you know, racism that countrywide we're still dealing with for sure. But I was like, I've lived a lot of places, and this one's tops.
It's so nice.
Like, there, it's just above the niceness. Like, even the negativity sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, even you go to the scariest places. And in fact, I've lived in some of the scariest places. I didn't know, because again, I'm Pollyanna.
Right.
I remember I was, my car broke down. I had to take the bus. And again, I'm not afraid, so I just take the bus. And I take the bus by, I lived off of Old Torf. And I took the bus right next to the Jack in the Box, which is probably like the most dangerous like bus stop like ever.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, not, I don't even think about it. I have no, like, I'm just like, I'm fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine. And this woman sits down next to me, and she looks rough and tumble. So many tattoos, and she's got all sorts of stuff. And she's like, you know what? I used to sell drugs right here. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And then she told me, like, her whole life story. And then she got on the bus with me and rode with me to downtown and, like, told me her whole life story. She was changing her life, and she came to that bus stop every day to try to convince the people that were selling drugs there to change their life and to go with God. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, even the drug dealers are reformed.
Right.
Like, she's so figured it out. Like, she was so pleasant. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, you know, if she was selling drugs, I probably would have gone, sure.
Right.
She was so nice.
Exactly. You're like, I trust you. I'm sure it's good stuff.
Oh, my Lord. That's amazing. That's how good Austin is. Even these scary drug dealers seem so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had but, I mean,
few
I don't know.
Unpleasant
I've definitely had some trouble, but, you know, it's just
it's
life.
A city.
It's human city. Life. It's,
there's humans. People have problems.
Yeah.
Nowhere's perfect. But
plus,
Austin
I think the world's
is
getting a touch angrier year after year.
I know. It's getting a little hotter, isn't it?
Indeed it is. Yeah. But I feel like, I mean, certainly you, from your experience here, are certainly well-trained. And when it comes to, hey, if the world gets real scary, you can certainly turn to all of us and say, it's going to be all right. Don't worry, we'll get through this, because you did that for so many women and people in Washington. When you got here, did you do any advocacy? Words are hard.
So, as I mentioned, I was kind of feeling pretty done with it by the time I got here.
Oh, cool.
But I did apply for a few social work jobs when I first moved here, just because it was my skill set.
Yeah.
And at that point, in the jobs I was applying for, it was like they really wanted Spanish-speaking people, which I totally get.
Yeah,
like, they
100%.
Just really wanted bilingual, which we needed in my hometown too, but it was just like harder to find. So I just realized, like, okay, it's not something I want to do anyways. I don't want that job. If they handed it to me, I'd do it, and I'd do a good job. But, like, I don't need to be doing that. I have done that. So
also smart, too, to not take it with, if you're not speaking Spanish, knowing that, you know, a significant portion of the people that would need your help would need that.
Which is how it was.
That's
where
hard.
I was also, but we had, like, half of our staff was bilingual, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as well it should be here in town, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And where I'm from, there's a large migrant population. It's a very agricultural area, so there's, like, just a ton of Latino people there.
Oh.
So, and people from all over,
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't
it's
know
America.
Anything about Washington State.
America is very similar
to think of
everywhere.
Like, I guess so.
Yeah.
The thing about cars and trains is they got us everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm always like, how did they get there? The same way you did with a car or a plane.
Exactly.
Just human beings traveling from location to location.
That's what we do.
That's
looking for work, making it happen. Yeah, so I moved here, and I was like, what am I going to do? And I was looking on Craigslist, and it was Christmas, and I moved here in November, and I was like, oh, I need to get out of where I'm staying soon. You know, I need to like get my own place of some kind, rent a room. I need a job. My savings is like dwindling. And I saw like Christmas Eve this ad for an eco cleaning, house cleaning company. And I messaged her and she was like, can you meet me the day after Christmas? I did a little interview. And anyways, I ended up doing eco cleaning for about 4 years for a couple different companies. But just like so easy, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 10 houses a week. And I could, you know, be done by 3 most days.
Is it just cleaning people's house with good products?
Just cleaning people's houses, yeah. And I mean, yeah, just stuff that's not horrible chemicals, basically.
Yeah. I wondered if the eco is just about how the products weren't chemical.
We reused all the cloths and everything.
Oh, so everything was
like, you're not like throwing stuff away every time. So.
Oh, right, paper towels and all that. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Man, what
a
great
deal.
What a like great niche. Like, I never even think about that.
Oh,
but
my God,
like, yeah,
yeah,
of course. So yeah. Much throwing away.
Yeah, and it's like one of those jobs that's like kind of instantly rewarding because almost everyone I worked for was cool. There were a couple duds, but almost everyone was so cool. And some of them would tip really well, which was so sweet. And some of them would like do the thing you're supposed to do where they like kind of tidy, you know, they pick everything up so you can actually like clean the surfaces. So there was some of that going on and it was a nice gig for a long time. It's like, all right, I'm off by 2-3 most days. I can go hit a happy hour and get some writing done or whatever.
Yeah.
That was like my thrill at that point. So
that's great.
Yeah, and like catch some shows in the night and, you know, maybe I am working at 9 or 10 in the morning, but like I don't have to be like sending high tech emails or like, you know, dealing with someone's life or death situation. It's like I'm scrubbing a floor and it's fine.
Yeah.
I can be a little hungover or a little tired. So it's kind of the perfect job for me in my mid-late 20s.
Yeah.
Until my body started telling me, don't do this anymore. It's hard.
It is.
It's real hard.
It is. Yeah. The physical labor part is definitely not good, though I do appreciate the sort of like, sort of reaping your rewards, like you finish and you're like, oh, it's clean.
Yeah,
like,
it's done.
You get that beautiful, like, look what I did. I made this beautiful, so simply.
Nothing's ever done in social work, and it's always, the problems are always the worst, and every day is someone's worst day, and you don't always, or almost never see a good ending, you know, because you just aren't there for that part if it happens.
Yeah.
So it was just cool to every day be like, oh, I made someone's life a little better and it's done.
You know, I read an article recently about how, like, there's people are saying that millennials are causing a better work-life balance to start to be struck, that like that like there for generations, for like the last 40-50 years, the idea was like work yourself to death and like always be available 24 hours a day, don't spend any time with your friends or family, like be
a slave,
be a slave to the job and all that. And that now, you know, that younger employees, or I guess at this point millennials living in their 30s, it's like people, they're saying like, I'm leaving work, you cannot reach me anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
my phone is off.
Working from home allows them to be able to do certain things in the hours that are flexible.
Right.
And it was this whole thing where it was like, you know, this generation is bringing us to understand, like, we need the break.
Yeah.
We need the yin and the yang.
Totally.
And you're talking about the social workers, like, I wish there was a thing where, like, you know, there was, like, seasons where, like, you worked 3 seasons and then you got 3 seasons off.
I love that.
And you did some other job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it's in the industry, not in the industry, but, like, in the same city. Like, if the city's running this, the city's probably running something else. Could you run the garden at the farmer's market? Could
something
you
different.
Be the welcome desk at
like
the recreation center?
Like,
things where it's, like, you have a job, it's, you know, you're gonna have it, so you're not worried about it, but you don't have
this.
To do this heavy thing.
Sounds like,
and then
some
this person,
bullshit. I'm just kidding.
Kind of does. No, I worry about that kind of stuff because kindness is always called communist.
Oh my God.
But I'm like, hey guys, have you actually looked at communism? It's not kind at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's not very actually helpful.
Yeah.
They want you to think so, but that's not the case. Being helpful is not communist.
I love the idea of having different jobs for different seasons, though. I think that would work really well for a lot of people. Like, certain people, not, but.
But I wonder if when millennials finally, well, and they're soon, I mean, with AOC, there's people starting to get into government.
Mm.
Like,
yes.
And even you were talking about, so you're talking about you get into the state senate, and I'm like, yeah, how do you get in there? Like, because I'm, now that I'm getting older, I'm like, I need to affect the government, and I don't know how.
Right.
And so I'm like, where's my in? Ooh. Who do I need to go to? How do what
should
committee do I need
to
get on?
That like do local government. You should research some cool badass ladies.
Oh, well, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that it's probably, like, there's probably a lot of, like, kind of, I don't know, entry level is the right word, but, like, ways to get involved, like you said, with committees.
I am not one of these 40-year-olds. I'm 41. I'm not one of these people who thinks that I can't do entry level work. If I am not qualified to do working in the government, I have to be entry level.
You have to learn.
It's like I told somebody that when my child leaves the home and goes to wherever he lives after he's old enough, because I'm like, college, whatever, or whatever,
whatever
you want, I'm going to go to L.A. and be a PA on movies. Yeah, and they're like,
awesome.
A PA? You're going to be in your 50s. And I was like, yeah, and I'll be the best PA. I'll make the best coffee, and I will be there, and I will have everything you need.
It'll be so fun.
It's like, why not? It's like,
totally.
Yeah, sure, my contemporaries might be 21, but I'm not trying to get to any level. I'm trying to just have a good time and like see different things.
Yeah.
But like, so I'm saying with Senate, so you got in, did you just like apply for an internship and that was it? Easy peasy? Or like,
was
it through college teacher that got you in? Or?
Yeah, it was like the political science departments at the university did like interviews. There was an application process. When I was at UD, I actually found this program online, and I was like, oh, I really want to do this program working for the legislature. I'd have to be in one of the Washington schools, so realistically I'd do it. So when I decided to go back to Washington, I was like, oh, cool, that's something I can apply for. So
great.
I applied for it, and it was kind of, I'd already been doing some legal and political work at my college, so I was like a little bit of a shoo-in for it, I guess, but it's kind of weird. It was like all high school senior, or not high school, got college seniors that were doing it, so they were all like 22, 23, but I was really young, as I mentioned. I was like 19 doing this and same exact internship, and I mean, I don't think I was like horribly prepared for it. I think I did totally fine. Not great, not bad, just totally fine. It was all mostly just corresponding with constituents, like answering. It wasn't really so much email at that point. It was like a lot of letters at that point in time. But yeah, answering just as the senator, like writing and drafting responses on like what would the senator say, and the senator would, you know, glance at it, make sure it's okay, and sign it. So just doing that kind of stuff, basically. And like,
that's intense.
Going to different, you know, hearings for different bills I was interested in, and kind of learning a little bit about the process, but I still, that was a long time ago. I don't feel I retained a bunch.
Oh, sure. No, I was just thinking, like, it's so interesting how, you know, you want to help, but then there's so many layers of between you and help. Like, even just a social worker, that's their full-time job, but there's still layers between them and getting the job done, because there's bureaucracy and there's all sorts of, like, you got to be real careful laws, and, you know, you can't hurt this guy's feelings or that guy's feelings, or hurt this guy's rights or that guy's rights, and, like, it's usually the rights of the mean guy, and you're like, I don't understand why we got to be so protective, but when you're a good guy and not a bad guy, you got to be, which sucks.
Yeah.
Hard to be a good guy. easy
important.
To be a bad guy.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so important. So really great.
Yeah.
When you got here, you're working with, also, okay, so other cool thing that I was thinking about when in your story, your eco-cleaning thing, you're working for a lady, too.
Yes.
So, like, you have a woman-run business you're focused
ladies.
In.
Yes.
You're doing writing on your own. You have your sort of creative outlets. You're going to see shows. You're getting, you got friends, which
people.
Is great.
Yeah, I got friends.
How many years were you here before you felt like, you know, you're comfortable, you're going to stay? How, you know, when did you start getting involved in, you know, performing? You know, because you kind of got to feel settled in a place before you can do stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I started hitting up the open mic scene, like, pretty instantly when I moved here. Cause it's
awesome.
It's, I'm sure, pretty similar for comedy if you do stand-up or whatever. It's just kind of like open jam. Anyone can do it. Show up early, sign up. Some people are good. Some people are brave, you know? And I was definitely one of the brave ones for a while. But slowly got better. And I would always just bring, like, here's something I just wrote, and be, like, reading it off a piece of paper. And, you know, it was probably garbage. But people were so nice. And just met the sweetest people, and still friends with some of those folks who've gone on to have larger careers and such. So it's cool to see how, like, just because it's like just an open mic, it doesn't mean that people there aren't good, and it doesn't mean that they won't have cool careers and do cool things. It's just like,
oh, yeah.
It's like who's new to town, who's newer to the craft, whatever, that's who's hanging out. So like my advice is still the same. I don't know if it's relevant now, but I feel like it is probably always relevant and timeless. Like if you want to get into creative stuff, like just start going to like the entry level stuff, you know,
yeah.
Like meeting the other people that are fresh on the ground and seeing what you can do with that. So I did that for a while. And during that time, you know, friends would ask me to do like a couple songs at their shows and whatever. So I was slowly getting into the scene that way and booking little things here and there, you know, like little coffee shop things and Flipnotics and all that.
You were talking about reading off a piece of paper. I somehow imagined that you were reading poetry or spoken word. No, you were like writing songs.
It's like, yeah, I have the guitar and I'm like looking at a piece of paper. Yeah, very cool.
No. The guitar addition alone raises its coolness for sure.
So silly.
I went to open mics for years doing spoken word and
awesome.
and like, you know, reading stuff off pieces of paper and stuff. Stuff like that. So that's, you know,
it's
me and guitars, I don't know how to make those work, but.
Right. Ugh, it's a strange thing.
Did you always play guitar or did you just learn it when you got to Austin? Or?
I started learning when I was like 13, turning 14, like that summer. My neighbors were musicians, not like professional, but like they had a couple guitars kicking around and a piano, and I think they went to like bluegrass shows sometimes. They were like a little bit more in the scene. I didn't really have any exposure to that. But my friend's mom, this is one of the homeschool moms, Diane Williams, loaned me her guitar and some little chord charts and just kind of showed me like, this is the 101, you know, probably took like 5 minutes, just be like, this is how you read it. That's what that means. Go to it. And I just kind of sat home and figured it out. And that was right around the time we had like dial-up internet. So I could like go online and find like christianguitar.org or whatever and like find the chords and the lyrics to some of my favorite praise and worship songs and also like a few Beatles songs and stuff like that, like a Dixie Chicks song, you know, a Jewel song. There were like a few other songs that weren't Christian, but it was mostly like for Jesus and mostly a Christian youth group.
Dixie Chick was very in the and the religious crowd for a while, right up until she said she didn't like Bush.
I know. How crazy is that?
It really is ridiculous.
It's my mind.
Especially these days.
I know.
Especially these days when he is like a comparative teddy bear. Like
so
you're like, oh my God, W's doing paintings right now.
I know.
Like,
and
guys.
Yeah.
Guys, hug him if you see him.
Seriously,
yeah.
Don't spit. Yeah.
No shoes in his
head.
He's
an innocent at this point.
He doesn't know. Yeah.
He has no idea what's going on.
He's like the rest of us. He's caught in the whirlwind. No, he didn't.
Yeah,
poor kid.
It's just a figurehead for terribleness.
Yeah, that's affluenza, if anything was, for sure.
For sure. It's crazy.
Oh, man. So that's so great that other mom, did she teach? I mean, like, did she teach other people how to play guitar? Or was it just like she saw that you were interested and let you?
Yeah, I think I asked her about
it.
I know. And then I was in 4-H and I would do like market lambs, which is like you raise a lamb for slaughter. It's a terrible thing, but kids do it. And presumably rich people,
well,
I don't know, people with money will like buy these sheep from you and it's like really good meat and, you know, technically like organic, free range, like all the good things.
Yeah.
Like the best possible meat you could really eat. So like that's
I wonder
what I would
if all organic meat right now that is being sold is being raised by children.
Maybe. It's so crazy. It's all just like that 4-H ring. Yeah.
It's like, but they like snuggle with the lambs.
I love
them. They have
them.
A good life.
I had mine leash trained and I would make all these little jumps for it in the woods and I would take it on runs and like have it do all these jumps and tricks. And I was like, it's building up its little muscles and it's making it better meat, which is probably not true retrospectively, but I didn't know anything. But yeah, I sold a sheep that summer and then I was able
That's
to go
cool,
to
though.
The little music shop and get a little guitar case. And then the rest is history. I mean, it's not my history, but I was playing some praise and worship music then, a little more religiously, if you will. I had a little band with my friends and
yeah
kind of learned some stuff through the religious scene. And then once I stopped being religious, kind of just set it all aside and was college work, survival until like probably 23-ish. I was like finally digging myself out of the hole a little bit. Had my first good job. And friends were like potluck style hanging out, passing a guitar around, and I played something, I forget, probably like Jewel, You Were Meant For Me or something, like just whatever I could remember. They were like, whoa, you can play and sing? Let's start a band. So the next thing you know, you like have a little Americana bluegrass lady trio. And, yeah, we're all Leos.
What's
we're
the name of that?
Leo Trio.
It was called Leo Trio?
Yeah, our tagline was back to me. It's like, it's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. Which it was really all about Kelly, but occasionally me.
I love it. That's so fun.
But we had fun, and we ended up opening for my favorite folk musician, Gregory Alan Isakoff, at this little house show that our friends were doing, which was like our big gig because it was like 100 people were there. It was a packed house and like a cool, cool, cool gig. And he was super supportive. I'm still like friends with him and his band and see them when we can. And they were just really supportive and encouraging. And that was kind of, I don't know, the zap I needed to feel like I could do something and pursue the path. So
it's nice to have a crowd to you know, back you up. And yeah. So like here in Austin, the music scene was welcoming and pleasant and sort of brought you along and inspired you. And
totally. And like Greg connected me to his co-writers who lived here, so that was nice. And then my friend Shawnee, who I came here, you know, I got to live with them, and they kind of showed me the ropes and where the good open mics were, and to share some little shows here and there, Flipnautics and such. So, yeah, really supportive community.
That's really great. Now, you've been here for a while. How's the community ebbed and flowed over the years?
It feels like a lot of people have left. And
sure. Where did they leave for?
I mean, some people are like hill country for sure. You know, like Dripping Springs, Driftwood, Lockhart, you know, like out in the country.
But to settle down in a family way?
Some of that is true, and some of it I think is just like getting out of the city. It got too expensive, too much traffic, too like gentrification-y kind of vibes. A lot of people have left too to just go to work, back to wherever they're from. Because it's like, oh, we have a pretty good little community there too, and you don't have to deal with, you know, endless issues finding rentals in Austin and with prices going up, 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 and away, and like all the challenges artists face in Austin.
Sure.
So a lot of people have left. A lot of people are still here though, and I think the thing I notice a lot with musicians is, and I think this is true pretty much anywhere, but it's hard to like be in Austin and make a living in Austin. If you're a musician, like it doesn't always make sense to get on the road, but also like you kind of have to try to make it work at a certain point,
because
you can make a little money out there, and maybe you build up some different markets, and maybe that turns into something else, or maybe it's just a little extra money in your pocket. But and there's also like a little clout you get from being like a touring artist, and people are like, whoa, they just went to this place and that place and whatever. And like, even if you aren't like balling when you're in those places, I feel like it like makes them look cooler at least.
So, it definitely does. Yeah.
So that's
like
kind
raises the stakes.
Yeah. And I think people, the thing I think about too, like I try not to play too much in Austin, is I feel like it kind of cheapens it in a way. It doesn't have to, for sure. Like if you're a legacy act like James McMurtry or someone, you can play two nights a week at the Continental and there's going to be a great crowd there always, because that's the artist that you are and the legacy you have. But if you aren't a legacy artist, you know, playing like I'm playing 2-3 shows a week, you know, no one's gonna come. Like your buddies are only gonna come out so many times, and you know, people are going to get sick of the songs, and how are you going to create enough fresh content, whatever. So I feel like for me, like whenever I get to go travel and play, it's kind of like, all right, give Austin a break, come back with a little new energy, and hopefully people will come out. But it's kind of a struggle, I think, to keep people coming back year after year.
As far as the legacy acts go, do you think that it's like just of a certain generation, or do you think it changes? Like, because you know, we're all getting older, and every few years somebody joins the over 50 Austin musicians. Like, do other people have you seen since you've been here? And this is just a random, like, maybe you're like, I don't know, but like, where people, like, you know, there's some people that have been famous in Austin for a long time, yes, but are there anyone sort of raising to that level, or is it like just those guys, they're gonna die out, and then Austin's just a free-for-all?
Don't know. I don't feel like I've been here long enough or been like intentionally trying to figure that kind of stuff out. I kind of just go to my friends' shows again and again and again, you know? So I have no idea, but like you definitely do see the people where you're like, oh, that person's rising up and they write really good songs and they have like a really good seems good at least, you know, management, booking, etc. And you're like, oh, I could see that person becoming, you know, over time, someday, the next, you know, person who holds down a residency, like, but like, who knows how long the Continental Club will be around? Who knows? Maybe as those artists die off, those venues will no longer, you know, the people that
even care to have it.
Yeah. Who knows what Austin will turn into? We're losing a lot of those kind of old guard places, and you know, it's something that people are sad about. But I'm also like, okay, what can we do to create new spaces and to make new memories? And it would be really sad if Austin just kept going kind of the way it's going and became just a tech town, basic, you know?
I don't know how tech town, like, I think there's something to the creativity, but you're certainly right that a lot of the old spaces are closing and a lot of the, like, efforts to create new places, like, I feel like while based on the argument that we were talking about the millennials having the good work-life balance, I think millennials will be better, like, theater owners and better, like, space, because I feel like that crowd accepts the ups and the downs, whereas I think my generation, which has been called X, and I disagree, but whatever, I'll accept it, thinks that, that everything should be great, and, like, that's it.
Right.
And I was like, no, but... But sometimes it's not going to be like something that I hear from people, because I do a lot of interviews with like theater owners, and it's like tough to own a theater because the business is 80% and the creativity is 20%. And so if you can't like manage that, like if you can't accept that part of your life, like it's not going to work out for you.
Totally.
But some of the younger people that I talk to, they seem okay with that. They're like accepted. They're like into it. Even the Fallout crowd, they like have such a healthy view of what it is they have in front of them, as opposed to being like, ugh, I can't believe I have to do this. Like,
and
we need that crowd. We need the crowd that wants to, that is healthy, to open up new spaces, to create these venues, because you're right. I think a lot of the people who run like the Continental or whatever are as old as these legacy acts. They're tired. They don't want to keep running a business.
Imagine how hard that must be.
And I can't. And the rent must go up millions every year. Like just the amount of crap that they get for being in the specific location that they made cool.
Yeah.
And now they're out. I mean, when I lived in New York, I moved to New York in the early 2000s. And every venue that I was part of closed because one by one they were placed out from rents, and they were trying to do it. I mean, New York is big enough and has neighborhoods enough that it's sort of like displaced to a certain, where it's like, okay, all the theaters are now over here now, and all this.
Everybody moved to Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, I mean, or sort of midtown-y, like even UCB's getting placed out of there. Like UCB,
crazy.
Who you imagine in your head to be like rich, they're not rich.
Of course
they
not.
They're the same. Yeah. They just happen to have some rich owners who don't want to give their millions to run this theater.
Yeah,
they want to help people. Yeah, it's not like they don't want to just give money.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we'd like to run a business, like, but the business is too expensive in New York City.
Right.
You know, I wonder if, to bring it around to Austin, like, I wonder if, you know, there'll be a new sort of community, because I think music and the arts is a really important thing in Austin. And everyone that I've met in lots of different points and levels have been like, you know, it's super important to have around, and it's and that's one of the good things about the town. Like, they even care about it in education.
It's great.
And like, you know, like I started working with Austin Bat Cave because it's like, okay, if I'm going to be teaching comedy classes, who can I help the most? Like, okay, this way half of what I'm making goes back into a charity, as opposed to like, you know, not that I don't love the businesses that I'm giving my the percentage of, great, but that's just because also I'm friends with them.
Yeah.
And it's like, not every business needs to do that. I just wonder, from your point of view, since music is different, my point of view
it's
is all about
really
like
any different.
Comedy.
Everything you're saying, I'm like,
it's
pretty much, it's a little bit different, but it's pretty much the same. And
what's the trajectory? Like, meaning, like, when I asked where are they moving, and you just said, like, outside of the city, I imagined you were going to say, like, Nashville and, like...
Some people are.
Toronto. And,
sure.
Like, just, like, places where there's, like, potentially a larger...
Some people are moving to L.A. Some people are moving to New York. Some people are moving to Nashville. Some people are moving back to their hometown. Like, some people are moving to small towns outside of Austin, but still, like, pretending like they live in Austin.
Sure.
And gigging in Austin. It's just...
That's fine, though. I mean, yeah. Is it... So then I wonder if it's the cities that have... I mean, generally, I find that cities are the cultural centers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Austin has it. Like, Houston is a cultural center, even though it just feels so vast. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just hard to kind of navigate.
So much going on there.
It's not that there isn't. You could probably get 1,000 gigs all the time, but, mm-hmm. like, it's just like... But also, you're going to be... It's a two-hour ride with no traffic from one side to the other.
I love my Houston gigs, but it's a huge city. It's really international, and it's kind of hard to know where to tap in. I usually just do house concerts or play at the same venue, the Listening Room place in Houston.
Once you get a hook in, you might as well stick with it.
It's so interesting, too. I think that people have this notion that there's one way to do things, and I like that you have these conversations because you're opening up the fact that there isn't one way to do things, and you're talking about how every artist is different and they're figuring out what they're doing. But, like, I've had it sold to me this year by people who supposedly know the music business in Austin. Like, you gotta do this one way of doing it, like... I'm going to give everyone this advice. You try it if you want, but this is what this guy's rock band did in the 80s, and it worked for his rock band in the 80s. He's telling me, a folk singer, a writer, to do this now. You draw a circle around Austin, 100 miles out, and you gig at literally every single place you can gig within that 100 miles, and you start moving out, and the next thing you know, you're taking over the world. You know, it's basically the concept, which isn't horrible advice, but it's also like, okay, what I do is really specific, it's really niche, I'm not gonna be like knocking down every single club in Central Texas area trying to get my very specific thing to work there. Mm. It's just not what it is. And also, he didn't ask me, which was the whole point of this conversation, I thought. He didn't ask me what I wanted and what my vision was for what I was doing, which is its own specific little thing. Like, I don't really care at all about being famous or value it. I just want to basically write my songs, play my songs, you know, build up my own little audience and be able to sustain that and do that thing. Doesn't have to be this big, huge thing. It'd be really cool to get some songs placed in movies and TV. Like, it'd be really cool to do some licensing stuff. It'd be really cool to, like, get into that. I want to keep recording music. I want to keep making albums. I want to keep playing shows, but I don't want to be some teen idol rock band kid in the 80s. So the way I'm going to direct myself is going to be really different than somebody that wants that, like, rock star career. What I'm going to do is going to be, like, a lot more subtle and, like, you know, a little closer to my heart, basically. Because what I'm doing is, like, pretty introspective shit. I have some rock songs and I have some, like, punky, weird, experimental shit. And I love that. And I'd love to make a lot more of that. But, like, a lot of the stuff that's resonated with people is, like, heartfelt storytelling, either about my life or about, you know, other stuff that feels real to me. And that's what seems to resonate. It's kind of more of like the social worky, counseling, healy-feely side of things, introspective poetry more so than like arena rock show shit.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's never going to be that.
Yeah. Yeah, the hard thing about what's different between back then and now is, you're right, the niche thing is so much more valued. Like, if you focus so intensely on the people who are going to benefit from hearing your songs, you don't need to do arena rock shows. You don't need to. And maybe if you end up getting to the point, like, for instance, now I can't remember her name. There was that comedian who did a Netflix special, and it was a person's name. And
is it a lady? Is it a guy?
Yes.
Is it Nikki Glaser?
No.
I just saw hers.
It was the woman who spoke about, she was from Australia.
Oh, my God.
And she spoke about how it started out comedic. Nanette, yes.
By Hannah Gadsby.
At the beginning of that thing. God. I didn't know who she was, but I watched it because I watch every, I'm a stand-up on Netflix.
Girl.
If they offer it, I'm going to watch
junkie.
It. I will watch it. I don't even care what it is. And I'll be happy or sad about it. I'm into it or not into it, but I'll watch it purely because it's my thing. You know, I want to see what's happening.
You want to see who's getting put out there too and what they're getting away with and what's being presented. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, she's international. I'd never heard of her.
She grew up in Tasmania.
Not only is that a wild thing, that like, I literally didn't even know that was a real place until she spoke about it, right? I thought it was a cartoon location, didn't realize it was real. That's how American I am. But in that thing, they have the Sydney Opera House is packed for her already. Which means she is already reaching this audience.
Huge, yeah.
So when people get all rah-rah-rah about how super, super niche her thing was, mm-hmm. I go, I'm sorry, do you think the 1,000 people in front of her were sad? They weren't, because you watched them enjoy the whole experience. Who cares what
this person
in Omaha feels about watching it on Netflix? That's not, her audience is them.
Totally.
And she shared it with us in case a few of us would have been the people in the audience. It's not for everybody, and that's the hardest part I think that people have a hard time with, is like allowing things not to be for them.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's okay.
It's totally okay. What I do is not for most people, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing.
But now with the internet, and with even just with like targeted marketing from your point of view, you can reach the individual humans on this earth
who need to meet you, who need
to hear your stories. Yeah, because that's the thing. I read this, there was this news article about loneliness and how like loneliness is what's killing us now.
Yes.
Like we can all literally call each other every minute of every day. We can be connected, but we are not. It's almost like if there's candy on the table, you're not going to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, it's available, so I don't need it. But
I think I'm getting an Amber Alert right now. Sorry.
The only reason I'm not, I suppose, is because I'm
you put yours in
my phone in airplane mode. That's so,
so
funny.
Smart.
Okay. Now I'm super excited that I did that.
Yeah. Sorry.
But
I
also,
didn't.
Sorry, Amber.
I ruined your moment.
No, Amber's going to have her moment. Yeah, but
loneliness. I've been reading so many articles like this because I'm alone all the time and I'm lonely all the time and I feel like I'm losing my goddamn mind all the time.
But there's also like, yes, me too.
Yeah.
But I'm desperate to connect in a way with other people who also feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Which is
and I don't know how. You know what I mean? But thankfully with the music that you have this in with these people. And I hope, I deeply hope that my podcast can be, because it's equally as niche in the way where it's like 90% of my things are about improv.
That's great.
And so that's not for everybody, right?
Yeah.
But so what about, you know, you're lonely, I'm lonely. What can we do as artists to, or like even what can we do with our own art to help ourselves?
Right.
Like, what do you think? Or what are you reading?
Exactly. Oh my God, my
stack of books. I was like,
might not have solved it,
but what are the people saying?
Right. Oh my gosh. Well, God, what have I been reading about loneliness? I haven't read an article about it in the last few weeks. I've been reading all kinds of other stuff about other things, so it's hard to totally track it back. But for me, one of the things I've been working on is I read this book called Digital Minimalism recently, and it's about how we're looking at our phones all of the time and we're getting lonelier. It's like, you know, the main point of it. And so I've been really focusing on like, how do I spend less time on my phone and more time with an actual book, with an actual human, making more coffee dates with friends, saying yes to more things like this, even if it's outside of my comfort zone, like do the podcast. Trying to, like, I took Facebook off my phone a couple months ago, and that's been great. Trying to just actually like go out of my house and like go to a show more so. Like, I'm not gonna like sit at home with Netflix every day. I'm gonna like go outside of my house and do a thing. I know it's like easier said than done when you don't have a kid. I don't have a kid.
I understand.
If you have a kid, that's like extra hard to do.
Oh no, I have to force myself out of the house every day too, because I have a human being who needs to leave our home and I can't just keep him cooped up all the time.
Right.
Like,
it's almost like a dog. They need a walk.
They do. They do. And it also, like, you know, he's a nature lover. I'm gonna keep him away from that? No. I mean, we go to parks, he just touches the trees and picks up the rocks. Like,
I love that.
You know what I mean? Like, I gotta get out of the house for that, and I'm not a nature person at all.
Now
like,
you
I'm just
are.
Super like, oh my God, what's happening? You know, but at the same time, like, you know, you have to get out of there. But that being said, I spend a lot of time alone at parks.
Yeah.
I don't know who's not hanging out at parks.
They're so great.
And it makes me very upset because I don't want the parks to close because no one's going to them. So I try to take pictures and say, look, I'm at this park.
Oh, that's smart.
If only just to like make the people in the parks and rec think that people are going to parks.
God, it's tough. I don't have any, I think it's, I live in like not a horrible neighborhood by any means. I love where I live and I won't disclose where it is on this podcast, but it's not,
no.
It's traditionally a poor out in the country neighborhood that's now like old houses and condos, you know, but there's no parks anywhere. I have to drive like 15 minutes to get to a park in any direction, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, 100% I'd go across town for the good parks.
Yeah,
like there's a park right down the street from my house, but it's covered in trash.
Bummer.
And to the point, well, good and bad. The good news is because I go there and I walk around while he's playing and I pick up trash while he's playing.
That. Thank you for doing that.
But because I do that, he now picks up trash everywhere we are.
That's
which
great.
Is so great.
That's so good.
I'm so happy that he does that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't pick it up and play with it. He picks up, brings it to the trash can and throws it away.
Love that.
What a good kid, right?
Love that. Like, if only everyone was like that.
But I didn't realize it was just one of those things where it was like, that's what he thinks you do. Like,
it's great.
You just do that. Because every park we go to, while he plays with stuff, I wander around and pick up trash and throw it away. Because it's just
great.
Like, why is this covered in trash?
I know.
Today I saw a guy working for the city picking up trash, and I thanked him because it was like, no one picks up trash. Thank you so much. And I like helped him.
That's
because
awesome.
I can't help it, but pick up the trash. But you know what I mean?
It's like, really good.
It just kills me that that's a thing. You know, I'm like, can I make a group of moms who can do this? Like, can we get
next
a community group?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Where
instead
it's
of
like,
everyone
let's
complaining
all go to the park
next door,
clean.
Let's go pick some trash up. Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, I take a walk around my house, and it's like not really picturesque, just sort of neighborhoods and like a busy street.
Yeah.
But there's trash everywhere, and I
everywhere.
Bring a bag. A trash bag, and I just load it up.
I love
so
that
like
you do
pushing
that.
The thing
I
and
think
like
about
loading
doing
it up.
That. And I'm like, why don't I have a bag? And then I keep walking. I'm a horrible person.
Well, no, I've done the walk like 100 times. I've picked up trash like 4, so it's really like percentage-wise, I'm very low. But
gotcha.
But like
you're
the world,
there.
You know, you need to get out, if only just to become neurotic and pick up trash. No,
exactly.
You know, just I like having random conversations with people.
Me too.
You know what I mean? Like
I talk to strangers better than people I know.
Yep. I like smiling at people and making them feel happier.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can always tell when somebody's kind of in their own head. And
mm-hmm.
I use the baby a lot for as a connection piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's very helpful. And he's very adorable. So it really helps.
Awesome.
But I do feel the loneliness, even in mom groups.
Oh, yeah.
And not just because I'm older. A little because I'm older. But you know, just because I guess I'm different and I don't think about those things, and then all of a sudden it occurs to me. It's almost like those things we were talking about earlier where it's like, I didn't know, I like this phrase Pollyanna that we're using, and we continue to use it. I didn't know I was Pollyanna, like I didn't know. And like all sorts of stuff, like I don't worry about my kid that much. I'm like, he's fine. And they're
he is
like,
fine.
Are you worried about this thing? And I'm like, no.
Nope.
Like, I'm sure there'll be a time when that bites me in the ass, but that's life. I can't, you know.
You can't prevent everything. He will be a human. He will have human experiences.
Yeah.
There's ups and downs and all around.
Yeah, and if I'm stepping in the way, then that's just going to make him have to, you know, fall through the ice when he's 18.
Totally.
I'm going to do this because I do this every time, but so I have this theory of life. Strap in, audience. I do this every episode. I have a theory of life. Every 18 years, we become a different person, and we have to both acknowledge the journey that we're on and where we're on in our individual journeys,
mm-hmm.
and also, like, forgive ourselves.
Right.
Like, because you wouldn't be mad at a 5-year-old for not knowing what he's going to major in college. Like, you just wouldn't. The first round is 0 to 18. You're with your parents. Most of your first journey is dictated by what they say and do.
Yes.
So that's that. When you're 18, you whether or not you leave the house, you become a new person because there you are. You're understand
adult.
Now. You get it in a larger sense, and now you're trying to become who you are, and you become adult you from 18 to 36.
Yep.
That's the like journey of you finally being who you are without the parents, without the infrastructure of the family,
yeah,
whatever.
You don't have to have it all figured out, guys.
100% not.
But I think people feel like they do. I see my mid-20s friends feeling like they have to, and I'm like, no, you're just now ending puberty. It goes to your 25. Like, wait till you're in your mid-30s to really freak out about shit.
Exactly.
Like, just keep learning and growing.
But to the interest of getting older, I think it continues, and that people don't give themselves the respect they need for the later journeys.
Yeah.
So 36 to 54, mm-hmm. that's another journey. This is a time of life when people do things like get divorced, leave their jobs, change their lives,
finally
because they don't know
baby.
What they're doing, because they're trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. And instead of trying to be like, let it happen, my journey is continuing, I'm going to be somebody else,
and
not be mad about it. Like, again, and when you're 5 years old, you're not mad, you're not 18. Like, you're just five.
Yeah.
Like, so if I'm 41, which is five in the journey that I'm currently in, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing right now, but I try to be cool about it because I'm following this long trajectory journey, and when I'm 54, I'll finally get what this whole lesson was. And I'm
maybe
just trying
56,
to be okay with it.
Maybe 60.
Is that the math?
There's a couple Saturn returns that happen, you know about this?
No, tell me.
Okay, so when you're born, the planet Saturn is in a certain position, and I really don't know what this means, other than that every 27-ish years, Saturn returns to that same position it was when you were born.
Oh.
So when you're 27-ish, like really it's like 25 to 30, 31, somewhere in that time the planet returns, and it's like a really tumultuous time. I feel like really what's happening when you're 25 is you're finishing puberty and you're becoming an adult slowly and you're figuring out what that means, and it's just like a really weird transitional time. And when I was that age, I had a lot of friends that were in their mid early 50s and they're going through their second Saturn return, and they were going through the exact same thing I was.
Yeah.
Identity crises. I know that I'm leaving one phase of life of like, you know, maybe regular adulthood and entering like a mature phase. What does this mean? Do I want to keep doing what I've been doing with my career, with my life? I feel like I'm called to do something different, but I don't exactly know what that is. So it's almost like this weird like secondary puberty or something. Like,
yeah, and the,
I don't feel like we ever
they don't allow ourselves. The I don't think culture allows older people to have that journey. They make us feel like we need to have it figured out, and then that's it. And then also like no more fun. Get to work.
Get serious.
Do your stuff. Be responsible. And I'm like, listen, I've been responsible since I was 15 years old.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that I'm not also crazy and wild and want to do everything. And as soon as you tell me no, that's all I want to do. Like, I'm still like that, you know?
You're a human.
Yeah. And you think about your friends who are in their mid-50s who are, like, going to go into another journey. Mm-hmm. The craziest part is medicine is so great, they'll have another full one. I mean, it's almost entirely likely they'll have another full, even 27 years maybe, if they're lucky.
Yeah.
Probably will be, though, the way the world is.
Yeah.
Like people aren't dying off in their 60s anymore. It's like you make it so long. And so if you're making it so long, what is that last journey about? And then nobody gives those people any level of respect. They're either the top, where they're like friggin' senators and they get to make all these decisions and maybe they're ready or maybe they're not, or they've been left out to pasture by their careers and their family and they just feel alone. There's a lot of loneliness in that crowd too. But that's the other part, is that like if we try to think of each person, I think of the 18-year theory because for me it helps me to move forward and to be a new person and also to allow changes. Mm-hmm. Like from 18 to 36, I was theater girl. I did it. I made it. All those things that I wanted to do were right. When I turned 36, I was running the theater.
Wow.
And I was like, yes, this is exactly it. But since then, so many things have changed and crumbled, and my worldview is different and everything's different. But it's like, it's almost like being born again. Like, and I don't mean that religiously. I just mean like I thought the world was one way. And now it turns out that it's not. And I have to deal with it and live in a new way. But it's just like new levels of figuring out what it is that we want and trying to be cool with it. And I think you were talking about like the journey, the different journeys that people have. I think that as long as we, if we all try to be cool with each other and we all try to just let each other have the journey that they need to have, then it'd be a lot better off. And I know that it's like such a silly, like, no, there's so many people in the world who want to stop people from doing things. And you're like, just let them be. Like, even the bad ones, like, hey, man, listen, if you, the only, you're not going to yell at a guy and make him not bad.
Right.
And even what we were talking about earlier about, like, villains, quote unquote villains, like, they don't make any sense. There's not, like, a qualitative, like, oh, yes, here is the moment where I became a villain. Like, that's a movie. That's a television show. That's how you write a fairy tale. It's not, like, how life is.
Right.
And so you just never know where people are and, you know, I mean, as far as creativity goes, both being a creative, I think it's like just be on whatever journey you're on and then receiving creativity. Because something else I like to say, and I'll ask you this too, but I like to ask people what their jam is, like meaning like what the thing is that they've been thinking about. Like as an artist, we always kind of have a thing, and it's hard to, I'm using vague phrases, but it's like, you were talking about how you read all these articles on loneliness. Maybe loneliness is a thing that you've been sort of jamming on, and then a bunch of songs
so
that you write are about this idea. Or like, you know, like for instance, for me, I teach, and so I teach the same level one, kind of like similar things all the time. How do I make it different for myself? As I, every day, I'm thinking about new and different things, and certain classes get the benefit of that focus.
Right.
Like whatever jam I have, that's what I'm focused on as I'm teaching these same things. But I'm like, don't forget this, because that's my jam in the moment.
Right.
As far as your creativity goes, do you have a current jam? Like, are you writing a bunch of songs about similar things? Have you been working on anything that you're excited about? What's the creative excitement in your life right now?
Oh, my God. I feel like I'm going through a major teenage phase right now, the last few years, really. And I have to give myself space for that because I didn't really get to do that when I was a teenager. So I'm just kind of like, all right, I'm going to be angsty as fuck. So I feel like my vibe lately has been like teen vampire songs. It's like forbidden love and everything's impossible. It's never going to happen. You know, like kind of emo rock kind of songs. But also that's not like what I want to do with my life and play every night for the rest of my life. So like a lot of the songs traditionally I've done in the last, you know, 8 years or so that I've been writing, it has been more like introspective folk-y songs, folk pop kind of songs about loneliness, isolation, failed relationships, you know, similar themes, but it's just like a little bit more of a rock and roll vibe. But I really appreciate artists that are multifaceted and that make a lot of different things, and I feel really lucky that I've gotten to make, you know, kind of more like punky rock albums and like not just like straight up folk Americana white people music. Like I've gotten to like get a little more rock and roll, and I have some really cool bandmates I get to collaborate with, and that's kind of influencing the direction in a cool way. And I don't know, I'm in the dark forest right now, honestly. I'm between projects. I've been kind of like rapid releasing for a few years, not with like a PR budget or anything, not with like intentions to like make it this huge splash. Just making it and serving it to my audience and, you know, letting it kind of be another layer of foundation, essentially, on whatever it is I'm building. I don't totally know where it's going. I'm pretty disillusioned with the folk Americana world. I just kind of went to the conferences and conventions and met the people and was like, man, it's just a bunch of old white people. I think they're trying to make it be less that way. I was just like, man, I don't want to be playing for the same old white men forever. Just like, they want to hit on me and I feel so weird. And I know I'd look like a girl from the 70s that you would have dated, but that's not who I am. Like, just weird, weird. I'm just like, fuck the patriarchy right now.
You know,
it's the Me Too generation. This is stuff I've known about and been aware about forever. There's finally a platform to acknowledge it. And I'm pissed off and I feel like an angry teenager, and I'm probably gonna write some more emo rock songs and hopefully get over it and make some cool, like Bowie-esque, you know, experimental art rock someday too. But
well, I think that the anger, if processed through music, is a good thing. There's a lot of people processing anger in different ways, and I think music's probably a great way to be processing that, both
in
the performing and in the receiving. I mean, how many, think about, I mean, I don't know, but clearly you're saying that your teen years, you didn't have the angst, you weren't able to experience the angst as you should have, but for me, there was a lot of loud singing of Avril Lavigne.
I love that, yes. this? Oh,
and,
my God.
And to get into that anger, you know. I mean, like, Ani DiFranco was my jam when I was in high school. And, I mean, I just, what was it? She just turned 50, and I was like, oh. It was like, number one, I didn't know we were that close in age. Number two, like,
she's still fierce. She's still making music. She's still touring. She's still doing the thing.
But hers is super niche, and she's got, like, political stuff that she does, right? Like, that in and of itself is as, I mean, it's as famous as she needs to be. She reaches her niche. She talks to, apparently her book that she sold became a bestseller immediately.
It's great. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. I was so excited for that for her. I was like, yes. Yeah. Absolutely, she should. She marked so much of my life.
Totally. Like, and again, like you said, totally a niche artist, but like had such a huge, huge impact. And she was young and scrappy, and she just toured relentlessly and lived out of her car. And I've always admired that aesthetic. Like, that was what I loved about Jewel, who was like the first young female artist I ever heard about as like a young teen. And like, she is just like this homeless kid. It, like, somehow got a break, and whoa, her songs are insane. She's talking about crazy, like, heavy stuff, and like,
yeah, think it's about these like people straight up folk, you know? Were homeless, like Jewel, Ani DiFranco, J.K. Rowling, like these women who were like, I'm gonna keep doing my art, and it will bring me up, it will help me.
It's for a purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's for other people too.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not just like they're writing it for themselves. They're writing it for everybody.
Totally.
And, you know,
and for themselves.
Like, for instance, with interest of like Ani DiFranco, who has like, you know, 20, 30 years of albums out there. Yeah. I mean, she released like one a year since she was 19 years old. You know, there's a ton. I find personally that like different times in my life, I need different albums. You know what I mean? You ever like return to an old album because you like need that journey again? You're like, okay, I need to remember this. Like, that to me is sort of what we're trying to do. Like, even in the podcast, I'm trying to create an evergreen thing where it's like, you can listen to this whenever you need this, whenever you need to know that being this, like, this person is okay, or that if you want to connect to this person because suddenly your journey seems nearer to theirs, like, listen to it. Know that there's a person who's making it through, who's like getting through every day, even though it's hard, even though it's crazy, and making new stuff. And you're talking about the different kinds of stuff you're making. I'm like, that sounds great. It's like, you're making your own mixtape.
I feel so lucky I get to do it. It really makes no sense that I should be here doing what I'm doing, but somehow the path has just continued to unfold, and I have, you know, regular gigs in Austin, which is not something that I take lightly. I mean, think about how many artists there are trying to make a living with music in Austin, and I have like some pretty good regular gigs right now. I don't have to advertise on the internet. I don't have to bring a single person to. I show up, I play, I leave, you know, like, so easy. And I have patrons. I have a Patreon. I have like really awesome patrons, even before I had a Patreon, that, and outside of it, who will like cut me checks for projects and like help me finish stuff and donate to Kickstarters. Like, I have people that have helped me on Kickstarters. People I don't even know who've donated hundreds and hundreds of dollars wanting nothing in return. Just like crazy craziness. And I don't understand why that's happening, but I'm really thankful for it, you know?
I think that there's, in the same way that, like, you were talking earlier about how, like, you're not trying to be famous. Whenever I think about being famous, I think about being, like, tied to something. Yeah. I think about how there's, like, a company that has an idea of what you are, and
there's,
they want to put you in that box and the
brand. You got to play that one song every night for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Huey Lewis, I went to a Huey Lewis concert, bro, when he plays that Back to the Future song, he complains every time. I've seen him in concert two or three times, and whenever he plays that song, he'll be like, here it is. Yep. Like, he does not want to do it anymore. He's tired of the song.
Tired.
But when you do music, it's so interesting too about how, like, with music, they want you to repeat everything over and over. With comedy, you repeat
you
a joke and you're fucked.
Fresh stuff every time.
Every time.
The pressure's crazy.
You can't even, like, leave the house doing the same joke. Get out of here.
Blows
with
my
that.
Mind.
I'm like, why is it not the same?
I don't know.
I listen to comedy albums like I listen to music albums.
Me too. I love the jokes.
Yeah, I'm like,
I love it.
I like, you know, certain jokes I return to because I'm like, yeah, that's right.
It's so good.
Like,
a good
it just
joke
makes me
is
feel
a good.
Good.
Joke.
And
oh
a good
God.
Song is a good song. Like, it's just about this moment of creativity connecting with me in that moment. And I'm like, yeah. like, even, like, think about, like, you know, phrases in movies you repeat. Like, I even think about that because there's people, like, that we know that are, like, writing movies. And then I talk to people, like, with this podcast who actually have had movies that they've written produced.
So cool.
And to talk to them, it's crazy, because to talk to them, it's, like, so distant from what they've written to what gets made.
So
because
crazy.
Every time,
so many, like, hands get on it.
They buy. So when you're a writer, like, they buy your thing and they go, "Thanks so much," and then they own it and they can do whatever they want to
rip it apart,
and they can rewrite it 5 or 6 times with different people. Your
different
name gets
groups,
one very specific
focus
legal
groups.
Thing, like your
based
name
based on a story by
different phrases to mean what you have, you know, and based on your agent or lawyer, that's what you're gonna get.
Jesus.
And just the idea of that. Just the fact that, like, these people who we know that are working hard on stories, that, like, put their heart and soul in these stories, and then they get totally changed by the corporate structure. So this whole thing is to say, don't feel like you have to do the corporate structure. The audience is there for you. The internet is an open market.
Right.
Like, people... and I see you have tons of fans. Like, there's always people. Like, it's so funny because, like, when you were in my improv class, you were an improv student of mine. And then after you became my student and we became friends on Facebook, I was like, whoa, this isn't just a student. Like, I'm teaching this, like, major Austin musician. Like, you have a crowd. There's a lot you put out there. Like, even just output alone. Like, that's important.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because you can call yourself an artist all day. If you're not outputting anything, like, nobody can really receive. And that's half of being an artist. It's like being an artist and having something to give people to receive.
Totally.
And, you know, you can't control how they receive it or whatever, but you still put out so much and you work so hard to do that. Like, how do you keep yourself going? I mean, we're lonely. We're trying to figure it out. We're angry.
It's in my mind. Yeah.
Sometimes I get held back by those feelings. Like, that's what stopped. I haven't written in a while because I feel angry and lonely and tired.
Yeah.
How do you get through them? You're putting so much out there.
Well, I'm really lucky in a lot of ways. I feel like I have some good habits. Like, I do the morning pages thing from The Artist Way pretty religiously.
Great.
And by doing that, I find that sometimes I end up writing a poem or writing something that becomes a song. Or I have really sweet friends that write a lot of music, and at times we'll do, like, we're doing a song a day thing right now for a month, or we're doing a song a week for the next 6 months, or whatever it is that we're doing. So I've had a lot of, like, no one's putting a gun to your head, but, like, we all respect each other, and we're all doing our best to, like, toss it in the Dropbox on the right day or whatever. So, like, a lot of...
And, like, support each other to do it. That's good. Community is great.
It's so important. And I haven't been writing much lately. I've been in kind of a refractory period, I guess, because I released a few albums earlier this year, and now I'm like, okay, what do I want to make next? And just have been, honestly, like, reading a lot of books. Like,
that's great.
Doing a lot of, like, therapeutic writing that's not really directed at anything creative. And I feel like I'm kind of, like, sitting on the edge of the next phase, but I'm not in it yet. And I'm feeling this little tug. It's, like, always been there, and it goes deep, but it's, like, I feel like I should do something a little bit punk rock, but I don't know how to do that. And I just have an acoustic guitar, and I don't know. But, like, you know, the angry part of you is like, I just want to fucking rage. So, you know, I'm just kind of sitting on the edge of the pool right now, thinking about jumping in and what that will be like. But I think that's kind of normal. I try not to freak out when I have those seasons of less productivity, because it's like, well, maybe you're, like, refilling the fountain. You know, who knows what's going to flow out later.
Yeah, dude, that I love that. I think that all the time. I've never really talked to somebody else who actually also thought that, like, that had the openness to, like, I try to be cool with the fact that, like, I haven't done much since I had the baby.
And that's your creative project.
There are days. Sure. Sure. But I don't even think of it that way. And, of course, I don't think of it that way. But
it is, girl.
Totally. Totally. Because I am not... I've been an adult since a child.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
Like, I am not funsy... dance around, sing a song. Like, whenever I see, whenever we go places and there's, like, somebody in a costume singing a song, I'm like, God bless you.
Yeah,
like, I'm so happy that you exist, because I cannot do that.
Can't get it.
I got fun stuff, sure. and pleasant, yes. I have a lot of hats to play with. Yes. I don't mean metaphorical hats. I mean like literal. No, I mean like actual costume hats. I have a box of hats that me and my baby play with all the time.
I'm fun today.
Yeah, but that's how I do it. Like, it's like if I don't have props.
I love that.
But yeah, I haven't done that in a while. And so I feel like a lag, but I try to say, you know, I'm soaking up a new thing.
You are.
A new world viewpoint. The other thing I think about, too, is I'm trying to accept the new audience I could have, meaning not like I'm trying to be a marketing crazy, but I mean, like, now that I'm a mom and I understand what that means, I can then talk to other moms.
Yes.
Especially about the loneliness,
about the huge
things where it's like...
No one tells you that stuff before you're a mom. No one tells you.
Well, the hard things, too, is that, like, there's 100 people who want to talk about it, but they all want to just post on Facebook, and I get it. I do, too.
Yeah.
But it's like, let's all sit in a room together. Like, I go to one thing where it's like twice a month, I go in a room with other moms, and we just talk to each other. And that's all we do. There's nothing to
no
be
agenda.
Done. Yeah, it's like, well, there's like one group that brings food, and then we eat and we talk, and that's it. And somebody takes care of our children in the other room. There's a bunch of old ladies who take care of them, and
they're
great.
So happy to have kids staying out.
Right, it's great, you know. But it's like, I still feel distant from all these people, and I still don't know. I'm like still holding them at arm's length and doing. But the idea of the journey. The idea of trying to forgive yourself for where you are in your journey, I think, is so well-adjusted. Like, that you've gotten to the point, like, I consider myself well-adjusted, not just because of my Pollyanna-ness, but also, like, I consider you well-adjusted.
Thank you.
Not only because I like seeing you exist in the world and you're well-adjusted, but also because of what we're talking about, the journey that you've gone through, but you can now reflect upon it. You were not only able to reflect upon it, you're able to like almost like right the wrongs of your childhood by working with those women in Washington State in the center, you know, like in the women's center, and helping them is such a big step to like then get you to the next level, and to know you're telling all these women they're worth it, then you know you're worth it. And you're like, you know what? We all have a journey.
It.
We all have our own thing. There's plenty of room for all of us.
Yeah.
To have whatever exciting journey you want and just be cool.
Totally.
Like, Hollywood wants you to think there's 5 spots, but there are not.
There's not. There's really only one spot for you, and that's being yourself. And, mm-hmm. you know, as they say, everyone else is taken. So, you know, do you, and your journey is not going to look like anybody else's, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's going to be okay. Yeah, happy about that. Thank you for talking to me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, I feel warm inside now, so I feel like that's a good end.
Just a little teary. It must be the estrogen flowing through my body.
Oh, it's so great. I have so much estrogen.
So much, yeah. It's a wild ride.
Very good.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.